This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
This is News Radio 1070 WINA. I'm Coy Barefoot. It's an honor to welcome into the studio John Whitehead. He is the CEO and the founder of the Rutherford Institute, online at rutherford.org. John, today we mark the anniversary of the birth of Thomas Jefferson. And you are the author of a recent commentary reflecting on the career and the legacy of Jefferson.
Yeah, I thought it was appropriate for a number of reasons. You know, recently the Texas State Board of Education removed Jefferson from their so-called Enlightenment section.
Yeah,
saying that he really wasn't a true influence in terms of political philosophy and the Enlightenment, which, you know, if you study the history of Jefferson, that's literally insane. But they actually replaced him with people like John Calvin and Thomas Aquinas, people like that. That's fine. But the thing is if you go back and look at the impact of Jefferson on just the United States, it's amazing. But if you look at the impact he's had on the entire world, it's more amazing. It was Abraham Lincoln. You know, Abraham Lincoln basically, when he went to write something, the Emancipation Proclamation, he was reflecting on Jefferson. And he made all these really far-out statements. I mean, when Jefferson's name came up, I mean, he was a glum fellow, you know. He was depressed a lot. He got really happy. But, you know, I pulled out some of his quotes. He said, "Jefferson had the coolness, forecast, and capacity to introduce into a merely revolutionary document an abstract truth applicable to all men in all times, and so to embalm it there today and all coming days, it shall be a rebuke and a stumbling block to the very harbingers of reappearing tyranny." That's what Abraham Lincoln said. And I think that's absolutely true. So when I looked at, you know, I just kind of imagined if Jefferson had never lived, what would the United States be like? I mean, if you just start with the Declaration of Independence and the political philosophy there, which really laid the basis for the Constitution and the all the documents that followed.
We're talking with John Whitehead of the Rutherford Institute. So that's Abraham Lincoln reflecting on the impact that Jefferson had, a point clearly lost on the Texas School Board of Education.
And it's not only lost on the School Board of Education. When I write something on Jefferson, I get feedback from Charlottesville, people who live here, and the first thing they say is, well, what about the slavery issue? I mean, that just kind of negates everything he did. And again, as you show in your very fine book, Thomas Jefferson on Leadership, again, by a book by Coy Barefoot.
Thank you.
It you discussed this. Thomas Jefferson was not for slavery. He was an early advocate, as you point out, to get rid of slavery. And he wrote a clause into the Northwest Ordinance, which was later taken out, as I remember, forbidding slavery in all the Western territory. So he really wasn't. I mean, that's a complex issue. And I say, go read Coy's book. I mean, that's an entire commentary by itself on his views on slavery. But, you know, as a great prophet once said, "He who is without sin, let him cast the first stone." People are complex people. I mean, complex beings. And Jefferson was a complex human being. You need to go study that on its own. But I think his impact on the United States, his political philosophy. Remember, the Declaration of Independence is the founding document of the United States. It's not the Constitution. It's a very radical document. It's a document, if you look at it now. In fact, in 1776, copies of the Declaration of Independence were passed out on the streets in Philadelphia. Routinely, people who read it said, "Is this communist doctrine?" I mean, they were freaked out by it. These are Americans who've never read the document, by the way. One guy actually said, "I'm tired of all this radical stuff. I hear so much radical stuff today. I'm sick of this radical stuff." But it was Thomas Jefferson, his philosophy in the Declaration of Independence, which if we had stayed tuned into that, we'd be in better shape today. You know, but we don't. Our kids don't know what's in this document. I have students that study with me during the year, University of Virginia students, and I routinely, you know, say, "Well, what about the philosophy of the Declaration of Independence?" They look at you kind of blank, wondering exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
The fact that the government does not give us rights. That's a really pretty far out thing. He was saying there's a creator, there's a higher law behind everything. The government doesn't create rights, because he knew if the government created rights, they could take them away. Everything is based on the consent of the governed. And if the government repeatedly violates our rights, we have the right to form a new government. And then you had a revolution that followed after that. These are awesome things. And then we all have these so-called absolute rights to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. when they wrote the UN Declaration of Human Rights, they based it. If you go back and read it really carefully, it's almost they're bouncing off and going, gee, well, see, Jefferson already said this. They were trying to figure out how to get around sounding just like the Declaration of Independence. But that's what they did. So what I'm trying to tell people maybe about Jefferson is really appreciate this fellow. I mean, he had some views that weren't politically correct, and they were not, you know, the views that I would hold on things like slavery. But his political philosophy is just absolutely amazing. I mean, so it's the beginning of the United States, folks.
We're talking with John Whitehead. He is the CEO and the founder of the Rutherford Institute, online at rutherford.org. John, let me ask you about the fact that over the past few years, maybe 10, 15 years, we've really seen the Christian right really, I don't want to go so far as to say demonize Jefferson, but they have truly abandoned Jefferson and sort of written him off their list of important founding fathers. And you need look no further than, as you point out, the Texas School Board of Education, which literally crossed him off a list of important revolutionary thinkers that students should be reading in school. Why is this? Is he just not religious enough for them?
I think recently I was at a meeting in Charlottesville with people that graduated from the school, some people with doctorates, and there were conservatives and liberals, and Jefferson's name came up, and there was a conservative lady there. I thought she was going to foam at the mouth because she hated him so much. And I was
really
going, why do you hate Thomas Jefferson? I'm just sitting there going, why do you hate this guy so much? I think one thing is this: he comes off as very liberal to conservatives, but also it's the doctrine of the separation of church and state the Christian right doesn't like. And they've never really studied Jefferson on that issue. Like many people have never studied the slavery issue, they've never really studied what he meant by that. What Jefferson said, and he wrote a letter to the Danbury Baptists in 1802 where he said, really the first, the Constitution erects the separation between church and state. But what he went back to say was, really what I was saying in his second inaugural address, he was clarifying it, is that the federal government should not be intermeddling in the church. He was saying our religion. So it was another civil liberties issue with him, and we all believe that. I mean, even the Christian right believes. I mean, should the people in the Christian right who all the time object to something happening always and they want to some kind of value in school, Christian whatever? And I always say, well, what if it was Islam? Well, they back up. They don't want Islam. What Jefferson was talking about. He was saying the government should not be dictating religion to us. But Jefferson was not against religion. I read his Jefferson Bible, which he sat in the White House and worked on, which he took the morals of Jesus and codified them. And it's one of the most it's a beautiful document. I mean, and at the end of it, he said, this is the most sublime teacher of ethics of all time.
Yeah.
And he thought it was something people should use to study. So you learn ethics apart from the miracles and the stuff.
Yeah.
That he thought.
Well, he cut out the miracles. He didn't believe that, God became a human being like Christians believe. He believed that this was a great ethical teacher from whom everyone should study. And he called them, these are the greatest teachings of anybody ever lived.
The most sublime ethics ever taught. And again, if you go back and read it, it's hard not to come to that conclusion. Love your brother and do unto others. I mean, it's the kind of stuff you have if people practice it today. You wouldn't have people spitting at each other and yelling at each other. You wouldn't have
But
wars.
Christians today still reject him because he doesn't accept the divinity of Jesus Christ. But he still encourages people to study Jesus Christ, read his writing, read his teachings from the Bible. But yet he doesn't go so far as to profess a belief in that particular religion. Yeah, they still reject him.
He was really clear. I mean, during that day he got blasted by newspapers when he went with this idea, because they thought he was an atheist, and he was not an atheist. I mean, if you read Jefferson, he was not an atheist. But the thing is that he's really misunderstood. I mean, he was very, very radical, and my commentary is called Thomas Jefferson, a True American Radical. At Rutherford.org, you can read it. But, I mean, he talked about having a revolution every 20 years, and he was, as I say, he was a heat-packing dude. He talks about carrying a gun on your walks. I mean, he believed in carrying arms. And that's another thing about the right. I don't understand why they don't pick up on that and say, oh, yeah, he believed in the Second Amendment or whatever. But here's the thing. Most Americans I run into today really don't study history. They don't know much about history. Their knowledge of even current affairs is weak. The other thing about Jefferson that was really, really neat is that Madison, Hamilton, when the Constitution was finished, there was no Bill of Rights. Jefferson was the ambassador to France. Well, from France, he was writing letters to Madison, got to have a Bill of Rights, got to have a Bill of Rights. And Madison didn't believe that. So really, as I've often argued, the Bill of Rights is in part a radical Jeffersonian victory. I mean, he was the one pushing for a Bill of Rights along with some others, but he was very, very influential. And so one reason we have a Bill of Rights is in part due to Thomas Jefferson. So again, take him out of history, erase him because he doesn't agree on every view you might agree on is insane. Taking him out of the curriculum in Texas, I exchanged emails with the chairman of the Texas Board of Education. She wasn't happy. They run my commentary in one of their newspapers down there. And I talked to her about Jefferson. I said, this is crazy. You don't want to do this. She didn't agree. But she clarified, we're just taking him out of the Enlightenment section. We're not taking him out of the whole curriculum. But I think even debunking him in that area is just...
Oh, yeah.
For some reason, Jefferson in many circles today, left or right, is not politically correct.
We're talking with John Whitehead of the Rutherford Institute, online at rutherford.org. I am struck by, when I talk about Jefferson, one of the things I always share with people in terms of his impact is that this his impact and his writings and his views are still so alive today among revolutionary circles. And I am I'm reminded of the fact that when those students gathered in Tiananmen Square back in the late 80s, and they risked their lives, as many of them were killed, but they risked their lives to stand up and demand change in their country, a more democratic country, in one of the most oppressive countries in the world today. They were, by candlelight and flashlight, reading Jefferson aloud to each other in Tiananmen Square before the troops mowed him down.
Yeah, amazing.
But it gives me chills to think about that in communist China, they're reading Thomas Jefferson to each other.
Yeah, and again, I go back. There are people here in Charlottesville that don't appreciate that fact. And so I think I think he's too radical today. I mean, what he said about how government should be structured is radical today. Very few people believe that there's a higher law above government where our rights come from. I talk to students who take political philosophy, and they stumble with that. They've not read about it much, graduating from very fine schools across the country. Those are really radical ideas. Again, it's genius. What he was saying was that government can't give us rights. They're already there. We're born with all these rights to free speech, to right against unreasonable search. We were born with these rights.
Yeah.
Government doesn't get, and he knew right away that if we ever relented to that, which we have today, most Americans believe, well, the government, they determine what our rights are, we would lose them. But again, another thing about Jefferson, he had amazing class. About 2 weeks before he died, he got this anonymous letter from about a celebration in Washington, D.C., I think, for the Bill of Rights. It was a forum letter which said, we want people to gather who signed it, but didn't even mention that he had written it. And that's the last letter he wrote, I believe. It was really a classy letter where he goes through and he basically says, thank you for inviting me as a signer. He never mentions once that the guy clerk who wrote it had no clue that he had actually written
the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, they didn't know it, and they were celebrating it. And so he has this really nice, classy letter he writes back, and that's where he makes this great statement. He was still radical, basically in his deathbed. He said, he states his philosophy right here in the letter, where he says, the mass of mankind has not been born with saddles on their backs, nor a favored few booted and spurred, ready to ride them legitimately. And he died about a week later. And supposedly, John Adams had been invited to that same event, July 4th, 1826, and they both died on the same day. And they said that James Madison was laying on his bed, and someone mentioned the Declaration of Independence. He said, this is a good day. And shortly thereafter, he sat up in bed and said, Thomas Jefferson survived. That was the last words he said.
John Adams did. Yeah.
John Adams said that. And then he laid down and died. Well, Jefferson had died a few hours earlier. But,
yeah.
I mean, that was the John Adams thought that, and they were political enemies on many issues. The Alien Sedition Act and things like that. So, I think that people here in Charlottesville need to really clue in that people that maybe not that don't know much about him. I'd say read Coy Barefoot's book, Thomas Jefferson Leadership.
Thank you.
Because why your book's good is that it's readable. I mean, it's short, to the point, and you get an idea of his leadership abilities. And he was a very practical leader. I mean, he did great things when he was president. He expanded the United States.
Yeah, yeah. We're talking with John Whitehead of the Rutherford Institute. Before we let you go, you also have your most recent commentary is about Glenn Beck. You are writing about Beck again. And the last time you did this, you were deluged with angry emails from around the country. How dare you criticize Glenn Beck?
Yeah, Beck fans got all over me because I basically said he was the future of television, but sadly so. And I think he is. He's having a great impact. If you watch people like Dylan Radigan on MSNBC, you can see the impact. He's trying to be Glenn Beck Jr.
Yeah.
Has amazing ratings, but I think the thing that troubles me now, and people will have trouble understanding this, I'm coming to the defense partly because...
to the defense of Glenn Beck.
Yeah, to the defense of Glenn Beck because there's been this massive boycott from the left against Glenn Beck, trying to get him off the air. 200 companies have pulled their sponsorship of Beck, and he said it was really hurting, and he said it several times. I don't like that. I like free speech. I think that we have to allow people to speak out there. We don't want the Glenn Becks of the world to push him off.
To go underground.
We want to hear here's the thing I argue about Beck, and I watch him on and off. I watch Wolf Blitzer. I watch Olbermann. I watch them all, basically. I don't think Beck's talking people into things so much as he's really expressing the angst of a lot of people out there, and that's why he's important. So, you know what a lot of folks are thinking out there that are really upset and maybe a bit violent, and Beck's expressing their angst. So it's important. That's why free speech is so important. I tell people that free speech is a steam valve. It lets certain people blow off steam. If you don't let people blow off steam through Glenn Beck, they're liable to explode. You don't want them to go underground. Yeah. I mean, there was a fellow out in, I think, Iowa a week after the Obama health care plan came down. They interviewed him, and he said, the president of the United States declared war against us a week ago, and we're not quite violent ready or ready to take arms yet, but soon we might be. So that's the people sitting out. There's a lot of folks really upset.
What's your thoughts on that? Because that's crazy. The president declaring war on his own country.
I think
country,
it's crazy.
People really believe that, though.
They really believe that. But yanking Glenn Beck off of television, I think, would really stir some folks up because he has 3 million viewers in a non-primetime slot. It's huge. He's outdoing O'Reilly and some of the other big show talk. He has a huge audience. So I think that's one thing, the practical thing. But the other thing is, I'm a civil libertarian. Free speech is really important. I mean, Coy Barefoot's next. Olbermann's next. Who's next on the list if you don't like them? Pull the sponsors and throw them off the air. I mean,
yeah.
We want people to have a right to speak whether we agree with them or not. Voltaire said, I may hate what you have to say, but I'll go to my death to defend it. And that's really important. Thomas Jefferson, I think, would agree.
John Whitehead, he is the founder and the CEO of the Rutherford Institute. You can learn more online at rutherford.org. John, happy Thomas Jefferson's birthday, and thank you for being here.
Thank you, sir.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.